West Virginia mountain melody, there's a new river singing to me. Oh, this time it's wild and free, your West Virginia mountain melodies.
Welcome to another edition of Around and About the Clarksburg History Museum, and we're joined today with Anna Chandler. Anna is the curator of the Helvetia Museum and studied Appalachian Studies at West Virginia University Masters of Arts. And Anna is going to talk to us today about the history of Helvetia and the Swiss immigrants who settled there. So Anna, welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
You are most welcome. I'm very, very honored to be asked and tickled to be here.
Thank you. Thank you. I had a chance to visit Helvetia this past week. This is in October when we're doing this, and I have to tell you, it was beautiful. I just love Helvetia, the people, the scenery. Took me an hour and a half to get there in my car, so I'm curious to see how the Swiss immigrants got there and how long it took them, but I encourage anyone to come up and visit your museum. The library is wonderful. People were so wonderful up there, so thank you for coming down here today. You're going to give us a little bit history of Helvetia, and also there's a connection with Clarksburg that the immigrants had with Clarksburg. But first, for people that don't know, from Clarksburg, how do you get to Helvetia?
Well, there are a number of different ways. Probably the easiest would be to take 79 south to the Weston exit and pick up... Is that Corridor H?
Yes.
33.
Yeah, 33.
Across to Buckhannon, and then pick up 20 south to French Creek to the West Virginia State Wildlife. I've always called it the game farm, but
the game farm to me.
But when you get to that, you turn left, and it's about 15 or 20 miles back towards, it's actually over towards Elkins from there, but that's the easiest way to get there. If you're coming from Elkins, go to the, go down, I think it's 219 to Mill Creek, and there's the Helvetia Road in the middle of Mill Creek. You have to turn a right to go out that way, and that'll take you over two mountains. They're pretty good sized mountains, and drop you right down into Helvetia. So it's not a short drive. If you get car sick easily, it's very curvy, but it's beautiful.
It really is.
And Helvetia is nestled down in a valley.
In Randolph County,
next door to Pickens, if you've ever heard of Pickens. Not very far from Webster County, not very far from Upshur County. So down there in a little corner. It's been there since 1869 when... give you the quick story about how it was founded. Right after the Civil War, West Virginia was a new state, and there was not a huge population in West Virginia, so the state government realized they needed to entice people to come and settle in West Virginia to help the state as a whole grow. And for whatever reason, they realized that the Swiss were very industrious, very well educated, excellent farmers. And so they put land agents out, and they did a mass media campaign, both in the United States and in Europe, to try to recruit all people. But the Swiss was one that, in this scenario, that was very interested. There were political unrest in Switzerland. Their primogeniture, I believe, was still in process, and what that is, that's a European tradition where the firstborn male gets all the inheritance. So if you had subsequent sons, they didn't really get anything as far as a home, any income. They'd have to go to the military, the religious sects and different things that are there. So
not much of a future for a young man in Switzerland.
No, not much at all. So that was kind of an incentive. Ireland around, not too far off from that, the potato famine hit. So there were just different conflicts and strifes that they had to go through. So a lot of them were aware of the freedoms that America allowed, land, religion, to be able to be your own person and without the restrictions that they would have had at home. Now, the one thing that was very difficult was you were saying goodbye to home. You may never, ever see your loved ones at home again. Depends on whether or not you had the wherewithal to be able to make that trip. And there's no airplanes at that time. They had to get to the coast and book a passage on a ship and sail across the seas. The later ones had steamships that were powered. Much earlier ones, of course, would have just been wind-powered schooners and things like that. But so they came after the recruitment was there. They came, and a lot of them came in through New York City, and they would gather in little clubs that were called the Grootly Veren, and it was a mutual support society. They worked together to make sure that if somebody needed something, they tried to make sure that somebody was hungry, they got them fed.
Kind of like the Italians have the Sons of Italy,
yes,
or something, some organization like that of the same group of...
Very similar, yes. And one of the land agent recruiters heard about the organization and went and visited and convinced them that West Virginia, the new state, had lots and lots of property. And to some degree, I'm pretty sure they discussed how similar the topography was to certain parts of Switzerland. Where most of these immigrants were coming in from was northern Switzerland, the German-speaking part. And the mountains and hills there are not unlike what we see here in West Virginia. Some of them had a little steeper, higher mountains, but a lot of them were the just mountains like we have here. So it was like, it made them feel like home.
Did most of these early Swiss immigrants that came to West Virginia, did they come from a certain city in Switzerland or just all over the country of Switzerland?
All over that I found, basically the northern part, which would include Zurich, Bern. Bern's not real northern. That's their kind of their capital city. They have cantons there that are like our states. So, and that's what I remember, the canton of Bern, the canton of Appenzell, the Zurich canton, Aargau, and several others. And then there were also, as far as settlement of Helvetia goes, there were through the years, we've had Liechtenstein, we've had Austria, Czechoslovakia. We've had several families that wasn't necessarily a whole group, but families that come and settle just outside of Pickens. There was a big Welsh settlement.
Really?
So, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. It was just really interesting that, these people came in, but the original Swiss settlers, once they decided they wanted to check out this new place, six of the men made the journey to West Virginia, and as close as they could get by train was Clarksburg. So Clarksburg's where they got off the train. They were met here by multiple land agents, even though they kind of knew where they wanted to go to start with, that offered them the opportunity to consider other places. I know one was from Braxton County, one was from down near Charleston and Kanawha County, but they, for whatever reason, they elected to stay with their original intent to go through to where Helvetia now is today in Randolph County.
Now, I did read in one of my literature here, some of those land agents that were in this area were names kind of familiar around Lewis Harrison County. Jonathan Bennett, Gideon Camden, those are Lewis County names.
Those are big names in that area.
And then John Hoffman was here in Clarksburg. So I'm not familiar. I think he was a colonel during the Civil War on the southern side, I believe. But these land agents would go out and they'd give you like a kind of like for when you're buying a condo or something.
They give you the spiel.
Yes.
The one that I have found was Mr. Eisner. There was a second one, a Mr. Lutz, L-U-T-Z. And I know there were a couple other ones. And
I think Dis DeBar, who did
Charles
State
Dis DeBar,
Seal.
Yes.
He was kind of instrumental,
yep,
in that also.
Unfortunately did, some of the families did find an unscrupulous land agent who sold them land he didn't own or didn't have the right to sell. So some of the families actually had to pay twice if they elected to stay. And some of them didn't have, you know, they've spent everything they had to get there, and then to find out they didn't have legal title to their property had to have been devastating.
How heartbreaking.
Yeah. So that's
and you didn't know the language maybe either, too, you know.
It didn't take a lot of them long to pick it up.
Really?
They were well educated enough that they knew that was going to be necessary. And I would guess that at least a percentage of them, while they were in New York, tried very hard to learn at least the basics of English. And then when they got to Helvetia and started settling, they would have probably reverted back to the native tongue, which I know they did, because church services were in German clear up until World War II, where that became a bad thing to do because of the negative connotation of German. And there's some stories that go with that too, which is kind of interesting, but we'll not do that one right now.
So they landed here in Clarksburg, got off the train. Then what did they do?
They walked.
They walked
it's
all the way to
between 60 and 75 miles. They walked. It took them 5 to 6 days. And they did. They were met with great hospitality by the folks that were already there, the local farmers that had been there and had their own farms and communities. But they, I would guess they probably followed the river from Buchanan, at least, up to Helvetia, because that's in the upper reaches of the Buchanan River.
And this was like in
1869 in October. Yes, you're right. This is the first round. So this is the guys going to check it out. When they got there, they decided it was absolutely virgin. There was nothing there but trees and wildlife. It had to have been stunningly beautiful, but I would think rather intimidating.
Yeah.
Because here's this really cool place that they're thinking about bringing their families to and settling in. And there's plenty of wildlife, there's plenty of fish, plenty of water, but no buildings, no roads, no railroads. So they've got to be very self-sufficient to be able to do this.
And the closest town to them, what would have been Buchanan?
I know Fiddler's Mill over at Arlington in Upshur County was not, it was a day's walk, but Buchanan, I'd say, was the big one. The closest larger city. And they decided they were going to stay, but they had to go back to New York to bring the people with them. So they built a very small cabin. It's the community settlement cabin, I think is what they called it. But it was just a tiny little place that they were going to stay in through the winter. And then, and I'll explain more about that here in a second. So they went back to New York. A group of them decided they were going to take that big leap of faith, and they were going to go to Helvetia, and they hadn't named it yet, so to this new place to live. There were 14 or 15 men and one woman that came in, and she was pregnant, and I can't imagine.
How brave these people were.
Cannot imagine this. So they got on the train, went to Clarksburg, got off at Clarksburg, and made the long journey into what is now Helvetia. And what they absolutely needed, they had to carry with them. I've heard stories that they didn't have any livestock with them, but I've also heard that, I think it was Mrs. Asper that was pregnant. Her husband made her ride a horse. And, but she said it was so uncomfortable being on the horse that long. She just wanted to get off and walk, and he made her stay up on the horse because it was a little cold and he wanted her up there and safe. So,
yeah, especially since she's pregnant. I mean, yeah. My goodness.
I don't know how far along she was. I know she gave birth, I believe, to one of the first children in Helvetia, obviously, because there weren't any other ladies at that point, but more came. So when they got to Helvetia, they all were in this little one-room cabin. And during the daytime, the men would go out, of course, and clear the properties that they had purchased to, and then built their own cabins. So when the spring came, or at least into the summer, they all moved out of the cabin and the next group came in. And so that happened over and over for quite some time. And they helped each other. And there were other folks within a reasonable distance that if, you know, if they needed help, but they were pretty much on their own.
I can't imagine the bravery of those people.
I can't either. Just
and how hard it would have been.
Just clearing the land to have logs to build your cabin with, and then clearing more to build or to have pastures and gardens. Wow. That's and these were not small trees. These would have been
huge,
you know,
virgin,
huge.
That never had been cut.
Correct. They would have been humongous. And a lot of hardwood, a lot of chestnut, which is a humongous tree when it's full grown. We don't see too many of those anymore because of the chestnut blight. There were pine patches, of course, but most of what they were in was hardwood.
And now, how did they get the name Helvetia?
Oh, good question. Thank you for asking. Once they got their community established, and there was a square that they reserved when they started parceling out the area for the community. So they got together and they had several discussions on what they wanted to call it. And Helvetia is the Swiss word for Switzerland.
Oh.
So that's what they ultimately settled on. There were several other names presented, but that's the one they settled on. So that's what you see and hear. I've heard it pronounced Helvetica, which there's no C in the name, but I've seen and heard people call it that, but we call it Helvetia. And it's a very unique little community that
it
has
survived.
It's very tiny today, but it has survived.
What are some of the names that are still around in that area? Do you still have families that are from those very early settlers that still live up in that area?
We do. There are Metzners, which actually you have Metzners here in Clarksburg that are from that family. You have the Hosleybachers. Again, a lot of the Hosleybachers, they were talented carpenters. So the Hosleybachers were involved with carpentry here in the area. Berkeys, I hate it when I go blank. Foreigners, they weren't Swiss, but they became part of the group. Aspers, they're not here. They went to Buchanan and moved up. Bettlers.
Berlin Carlin, I knew him.
Carlins, they were an early family. The Bettlers and Carlins. The first round, and bear with me here while I look at my notes, Halders, Muellers, Aspers, Zielmann, Holzweg were the first group that came in with their families. And then my family's surname was Coprio and Schweitzer. And they didn't live in Helvetia, but they lived on the other side of Pickens in a little community called Penbro. They came into Helvetia to go to church and to do Sunday school and were part of the community.
Now, it was a self-sufficient little community. Like, you had doctors and...
There were different doctors. That most of the women were midwives. They knew, you know, they knew how to take care of that. A lot of the early folks, they were professionals, a lot of them. While they did know how to farm and do things, they were bakers and jewelers and cheesemakers and not so much doctors. They kind of came in as the need was there, because Dr. Stuckey, who was probably one of our more famous ones, and Dr. Gruber, who happened to be a nephew of Hans Gruber, who wrote Silent Night.
Really?
Lived in Helvetia for a while. We're kind of proud of that.
That would be something to be proud of, yes.
And the gentleman, it's kind of neat how things go in a circle. Since Dr. Gruber was nephew of the writer of Silent Night, the gentleman that lives on that property now is actually a professional concert pianist. So how perfect is that?
Oh, that's neat.
And it's very cool to know that musical circle has made the loop.
Helvetia had their own band too, didn't they?
Oh, they had multiple bands. And initially there was one, and they were brass bands. That was kind of on vogue at the time period. Was each community, each lumber company or whatever had their own brass band, and they played at all the events. And with the Helvetia band, it's been called the Star Band and the Helvetia band both. And part of that is because at one point in time, somebody had a disagreement, just like everything else, people disagree. So that lo and behold, now there are two bands. And there was also a baseball team. They had their own little baseball team that they played. And that was, you see a lot of pictures of Helvetia Baseball, HBB, I think is what it says on it. You didn't necessarily have access to the outside world, so you brought things with you. You know, music has always been a huge part of our community. They've even created the Helvetia Polka is a conglomeration of bits and pieces of other dances that they brought with them from Switzerland that we dance.
I think your librarian was telling me I could go on YouTube and find the Helvetia songs, music, and everything on there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm anxious to look at that. I love that type of music like that.
We sing, because of the isolation of the area, the language did not evolve as it does out in a larger community. So when people from Switzerland, and we do absolutely get people from Switzerland that come to visit, this Swiss embassy in Washington has some really good connections with Helvetia. But when they come to visit, they say it's like us speaking in old English because our Swiss didn't change.
That's interesting.
And they're just two or maybe three people now that still have any of that old language that they can speak. It's kind of died out with World War II. I know my grandfather, his wife's father spoke German, but my grandfather forbid it in World War II, said, "We will not speak German in this house." And that was very common. You just didn't do that because of people thinking you were subversive and helping the Nazis on the other side.
And then that kind of got lost because you didn't speak that.
Yes. And I mean, that's kind of a shame because there wasn't a soul up there that was supporting the Nazis. But just because they were German language speakers, that kind of thing happened.
Now, talk a little bit about early industry there. What did people do when they came to Helvetia to live? Where did they work? What did they do for a living?
Most of it was self-sufficient, farming, those types of things. There were several stores. Gus Sennhauser had a store. He was one of the early settlers. There were absolutely sawmills. There was a little grist mill there in Helvetia. That I've seen a photograph of it, so I know it's a very old scenario, but old location. Excuse me. There was a cobbler that Mr. Detweiler was, that's another early name, was an active cobbler, and his little cobbler shop's still there. That you can see it right by the road when you're in Helvetia. And during the fair, the family sometimes opens up the little cobbler shop. He's got lasts and some of the equipment that they used to make shoes. Being self-sufficient, they all either learned or knew how to do blacksmith work. There had to be, and if you didn't, you knew somebody that was, so that you could have blacksmithing done for, if nothing else, to get your animals shoed. If you had a horse.
People don't realize how important a blacksmith was to a community.
Oh, heavens, yeah. And initially, in a lot of communities, I don't know about Helvetia, but in a lot of communities, the blacksmith also doubled as a dentist. That kind of migrated to the barber, who I do have a picture of a gentleman in Pickens who was both the barber and the dentist. So, I'm like, okay.
Now, you wanted to touch upon some of the little communities around Helvetia, too. Alexander, was big on the logging initially. Just mention some of the little communities there that sprang up around Helvetia.
Alexander, Brooks Hill. Alexander absolutely was a logging community. It was established by a logging company, and then the ownership of the mills, and there was more than one. There was an Upper Alexander and a Lower Alexander, but those changed as time went by. Brooks Hill was a farming community. I don't know that there was any industry up there, but there was a pretty good settlement of families up there. I know a couple of them had ginseng that they would grow. And that even in today's world is a valuable cash crop.
Yes.
Then Czar is just, it sits next door to Helvetia. It is named, the original names were selected and for the new post office that was going to be put in Czar. And the postmaster said, no, those are already taken, so we're going to call it this. So the name was actually selected by the postmaster. And there's Palace Valley, which is a really pretty little community. And it actually has a railroad that runs right through the middle of it, because that is the railroad that runs from Star, which is coal plant, but I believe that has now or is going to be closed and the railroad shutting down. So that's kind of a shame. And it comes down to Alexander.
That railroad probably opened that area up a lot though, didn't it?
Absolutely. There's some wonderful ghost stories and just stories of life up that spur of the railroad. And then at Alexander, it joins up with another one that went up and through Newland, Selbyville, which there's Rupture County communities, and then up to Craddock and Silica and on up into Pickens. So Helvetia, although it did at one time have, well, I'm getting ahead of myself here, other communities, Pickens, of course, Turkey Bone, Penbrough is an early Swiss settlement, and unfortunately they picked the area what that area has probably the poorest soil around. So that little community didn't last very long. That's where my grandmother was actually born, but they ended up moving elsewhere with that.
I think Adolf.
Adolf, yes. That's a Swiss settlement, absolutely. I'm trying to think. I know there's Star. Blue Rock, which supposedly is named because it gets so cold in the winter, the rocks turn blue. That's what I was told.
I bet the winters are pretty brutal up in that area.
The view from Blue Rock at the very top is just, you can literally, I think you can actually see Virginia out way off in the distance on a clear day. Just beautiful up there.
Helvetia area, I think any time of the year would be beautiful up there. I've never been there in the winter time. But I bet it's beautiful.
Our farm's halfway between Helvetia and Pickens. And my grandfather told me he had seen it snow up there 12 months out of the year. Now, did it stick? No. But he'd seen it actually snow. And it snowed up there last night.
Oh, I heard they were expecting snow. Yeah. I wondered about that.
It would be pretty because the leaves are still on the trees and the ground's still warm enough that it wouldn't have, you know, stuck at all. But it would have been just gorgeous to see that happen. But yeah, it can be pretty rough. And I know I'm forgetting probably a dozen local communities. And I apologize to anybody that's saying, but what about, because that was not my intent, is to forget them. I just,
there's just so many to try to think about. So what was the heyday of Helvetia? What would you say when the timber industry was there? Or
I would have to say the 20s, 30s, and 40s, probably. With the coming of World War II, military and military support were huge. So just like any other community, a lot of the male population, you know, a lot of West Virginia ended up in Akron with Goodyear and it's Boeing now, but there were several aircraft companies up there. So they went away and into Chicago to support that. If they didn't serve in the military, they supported the military. And the home farms, sometimes they took the family, sometimes they didn't. If they took the families, the farms were just left idle. And that's unfortunately what happened with a lot of them.
Talk about Helvetia today. If I go to Helvetia, what would I see when I visit there?
You will see a very tiny little community that is very proud of its Swiss roots. In Helvetia, there is the Hütte, which is a restaurant that has Swiss-German food. And I will suggest to anybody that's interested in going up, because food's really good, but please do double check for their availability. They've had some staffing challenges, so they've had to adjust their hours a little bit, but it's well worth the drive up.
It absolutely. I had it there the other day. It's delicious. As soon as you walk in, the smell.
Oh, it smells heavenly.
Great. Yes. That's great. It's like a little house, isn't it?
Well, and it is.
All little rooms you set in.
And it was made in a house. The building that was originally on that site, I'm going to show you this picture just so you can see it.
Oh, okay.
This is the store. The Vogel store was the original building that was on that space, but it burned down. And when they rebuilt it, they built a home. And Stella Carlin Duke was the lived in that home, and she had gas pumps out front, and she had when the telephone finally made it to Helvetia, the switchboard was in that building. And when you go back in one of the back rooms, that old switchboard's still back.
Is that hers?
It's
That
whole building is full of beautiful antiques.
Oh, there's something to see everywhere you look.
Yep. And you go back, turn around and look again, and you'll see more, which is just, it's a beautiful place to stop and visit. And they've got a deck out back. If the weather's warm, you can eat out on the deck. It's a covered deck, so you don't have to worry about sitting in the hot sun. It's a beautiful place. So that's the restaurant.
I know the day I was there, Anna, I think I saw probably 3 or 4 cars from out of state.
Mm-hmm. There are motorcycle clubs that they make an annual fall pilgrimage in. Somebody said the other day there was 4 or 5 Porsches sitting in the parking lot. So it was a group of a car club that had made the journey in to come and enjoy the drive and watch for the leaves and have a meal at the Hütte. So they have quite a good following, and it's not all local. There's some folks that make quite the drive to come in to visit them.
And it's worth it. I highly recommend it.
It's wonderful. I do, too. I don't get to visit it nearly enough. Also in the community, there's 2 halls. One is a big tan hall. That's the community hall. And it has a full kitchen and a full basement down where when we have the ramp supper. In the last Saturday in April, the farm women put on a ramp supper. That's been going on for a long, long time. That's held there. They have dances during the warmer months in the big hall. There's a second hall. I call it the Red Hall. I think it's technically the Star Band Hall. But during the colder months, the first Saturday dance, and there's a dance every Saturday, first Saturday of each month, is held at the Star Band Hall. And if you want to learn how to do some of the Helvetia dances, that's a great opportunity to come because it's not usually really packed.
That'd be fun.
And folks are more than willing, and they love teaching folks how to do the dances. There's 3 or 4 that we do routinely, and there's usually somebody there that can teach you. If not, you're just going to have a good time, which is fine. There are several homes that were part of the original community, which is nice to see, and they've been lovingly tended by their owners. And lot, I know the Detweiler home has stayed in the Detweiler family since. I mean, in some of our very oldest pictures, you can see that house is there. There are 2 places to stay. There's in Helvetia. There's a couple other things around, but Swiss Roots is a. There are rooms with private baths that have a communal kitchen that is part of it's adjoined to a little store that's right there that has our mask museum in it.
I saw that. And yes. The mask, I want to talk about that.
Yep, about Fasnacht. It's quite the event. And the other is the Beekeeper Inn, which is housed in one of the older homes of the community. And that is to request to stay in that, you need to go through the restaurant, through the Hütte. And it's a bed and breakfast, basically, on that.
It's very quaint.
It's beautiful in there. We also have a church that was our church. It's a Presbyterian church at this point, but when it was started, it was the German Reformed Church. It sits up on the hill, and doors open. It's just a beautiful, peaceful place to sit and think about things and talk to people. We have a library that the archives is attached to, and that's what I'm involved with, is the archives itself is an old one-room schoolhouse that we got in about 1969 from Braxton County.
It's a log house?
It is a log schoolhouse, and it's attached to the library, so that's where our archives is. It's got meeting space in it, and we actually took the Swiss flag that was hanging in the museum, which is an original settler's cabin that was moved down to right beside the library that houses all of our beautiful, there's just a little bit of everything in there that the local families in the community donated to put in that museum. So a lot of it, there's a foot-powered lathe, there's a milk can that would have been used to go up in the high pastures, milk your sheep or cattle, and then bring the milk back down to make cheese with. Just books. There's a table set in the middle with dishes and silverware that's been donated. Spinning wheels that were made in the community.
I saw a grain cradle.
Absolutely. There's a walking spinning wheel and there's a seated spinning wheel that Mr. Merkley made. And let's see, what else are we in the community here? We've got homes.
Beautiful little stream that runs down through the center of Helvetia.
To save my soul, I cannot think of what the name
And you know what else is. I loved was the clock chiming every 15 minutes. I think it was going every 15 minutes. It's just so peaceful.
It really is. There is pretty much no cell service down in that little valley. So we still have a payphone. I'm not sure how
long. I saw that. That was an antique.
It's a working antique. And I believe somewhere down the line, the phone company will probably take it out. But there really is no cell service in there. The Swiss Roots has cell service or Wi-Fi. The several residents in the area do. And I'll tell you this story because I thought this was funny, but it's true. If you go on through Helvetia towards Pickens, you crest the hill, and then you start down just a little bit, and the Pickens Cemetery is up there. Helvetia has a little cemetery, too, but you go up to the Pickens Cemetery, which is up on top of the hill, and you'll see people sitting in the middle of the cemetery, and they're talking on their cell phone because that's where you can get cell service. So we kind of chuckle about you got to go to the cemetery to talk to somebody, and you know they're going to talk on their cell phones. And then you drop down into Pickens, and Pickens is a beautiful little community on its own. It was very much timber-based. That's why it was built to start with, was to extract the timber in the area.
Still has a school there, too, doesn't it?
It still has a school, and God bless them. They're fighting because Randolph County is trying to close that school. It would probably be an hour to an hour and a half bus ride across those mountains for the kids. That's dangerous in my mind. And the students there, this year they graduated 2. And they're not going to have another graduating class for a couple more years just because the class sizes are so small. But the kids there do amazing things. A lot of them do military. We've had multiple doctors, lawyers, engineers. The kids do very, very well.
That says a lot.
It really does. And I know they, you know, in old one-room schoolhouses, the older kids help the little kids. One of the first things that I recognized and thought was really cool, because I went to school in Morgantown, at Morgantown High, which it's a big school. But when I came to one of my early dances in Helvetia, I noticed how the big kids were playing with the little kids. And you just don't see that in a bigger environment, but that's just the way it is. You know, you take care of each other, and if this one happens to be 6 years old and that one's 16, then that's okay. They still play together.
That's how it should be.
Yeah, and it was really, really neat. I liked that very much.
Now, I have to ask you about some of your activities you have there during the year, but the one that I really want to ask about is Fasnacht. Tell us the concept of that and what you do at Helvetia
this
year. That's a big event for you guys.
It is. When the family settled Helvetia, they were predominantly Protestant. There were very few Catholics. I mean, that was part of the religious strife back in Europe, was Protestant versus Catholic. But there were Catholic families around. So, and not at the very beginning, but the end of winter and the beginning of the Lenten season is part of Easter. One of the things you always do, and I'm not Catholic, so if I get this wrong, I'll apologize now, is you don't eat meat during Lent and meat products, which would include fat, lard, which would be one of the predominant fats that they use in cooking. You'd have a big tub of lard and you'd use it, and you use lard with your sausages and so, you know, just all of that. But So one of the ways to use up that fat was to have, and this happens at Fasnacht, we, the farm women, get together and we make Hosenblatts and Pizzelles.
What's Hosenblatt?
A Hosenblatt literally translates to knee patch. And what it is you make this dough and you stretch it out till it's thin enough literally to lay it down on newspaper and read the newspaper through. So it's very thin.
Like a strudel almost.
You don't put anything in it.
Oh, okay.
And they're called knee patches because the ladies would roll them out on their knees, stretch them out on their knees. And then it's deep fried. And then powdered sugar put on them.
That sounds good.
The same thing with the rosettes, which you take a Pizzelle iron, basically, and it's very similar to Pizzelles. And I know a lot of the Italian family knows what that is. But they, you know, you dip them, you fry them, you put powdered sugar on them. So that was a way to use up that fat for before Lent started, because you weren't to use that for Lent. And you know about Mardi Gras that happens in New Orleans. That's a pre-Lent festival. So I kind of call Fasnacht the Swiss Mardi Gras.
Oh, okay.
And they do celebrate various levels and just various ways of Fasnacht in Switzerland, even today, where they have parades. And in Helvetia, what we do is everybody, and this has migrated a little bit with time so that it's a daytime event more than a nighttime event, but it still has an evening dance. You dress up, and the whole point, the way it was explained to me, is you want to scare Old Man Winter away. Everybody's in costume, and you come, and there's an effigy of Old Man Winter either in the hall or in the central, wherever everything is going on that day. And everybody just music everywhere. People bring their instruments and sit and play. And we have just a wonderful time. And then at a certain point in time, everybody makes sure they're all masked up.
And some of these masks are really grotesque.
Well, really grotesque and very original.
Yes.
A lot of folks
amazing.
Do paper mache masks, and some of them are 4 feet tall. They're huge. And so they start over near the library, and they walk around the community and up to the big hall, taking Old Man Winter with them. And there's a bonfire in front of the big hall, and they throw Old Man Winter on the bonfire. As I said, it's supposed to scare him away. It usually just ticks him off.
Yeah, because we're still in the middle of winter, yes. Usually.
And it's not on a set date, because Lent is based on when Easter is, which mm-hmm. First Sunday after the first full moon, after the first day of spring. So all that has to fall into place. And this is always the Saturday before Ash Wednesday. So it
can still be cold.
It can be very cold. We had an event. I did not make the journey up for this one, but it was frigid. It was down below zero. And there were people there. They brought tents to sleep out in. And the weather just got so bad, they had the event, but what happened was anybody that couldn't leave, because the roads were horrible with a snowstorm that blew in, the community took people that had come in to visit and took them home with them and took care of them for the night, so that tomorrow in the daylight and the roads had been cleared, then they could go home.
That's nice.
The kind of thing they do.
How nice.
You take care of your family, then you take care of your neighbors. And that's just, when Superstorm Sandy hit, the same thing.
You're not a stranger in Helvetia,
no,
are you?
No, you might not interact a whole lot sometimes, but people are aware you're there, and if you need them, they'll be there, which is wonderful.
And you have a lot of events during the year. You have the Swiss Day. Is it Swiss Day?
Swiss National Day,
yes.
Is the nearest weekend to August 5th, and that's August 5th is Switzerland's July 4th, their Independence Day. Switzerland is a very, very, very old confederation of states, cantons. And we don't do a whole lot. That's usually kind of a little toned down event. The 20th, this next Sunday, this coming Sunday, is Helvetia Day, which celebrates the journey into Helvetia by the original settlers. So we're going to walk up and come down the trail that they came down on, and then have a little covered dish potluck and music that afternoon. If people want to come up, they're welcome to come up for church. Church services are always open to anybody, of course. There's a festival called Follow Your Bliss, which is in June, and it was organized by the son of a gentleman who used to be Rogers McAvoy, who was a retired WVU professor who loved Helvetia so much he moved there. And one of his sayings was, follow your bliss, you know, find your happy place and be there. And he did that with Helvetia. So his son has created Follow Your Bliss, which is a music festival that it is out in the meadow. We have a meadow with a little raised stage in the middle of the community, and music from early morning to clear into the evening. There's usually vendors and food and beverages available. It's just that's probably our newest event, and it's very well received. It covers all genres. It's not Swiss music. It's just local. Well, not even necessarily local. He brings in bands to play, and then Phil is Rogers' son. He's got a group that and the members vary. He calls it the Fill in the Blanks band. So between the groups where there's a blank, fill in the blanks, go in there. And I thought that was a very creative name, I thought. We've done.
Are your ramp festivals well received? You have a lot of people for those?
We do. Not as much as we have in the past because of competing. Where we're at right now in Helvetia is the last Saturday in April. That's also the same time Elkins does theirs, and we're not that far from Elkins. So we lost some participation because of that. Pickens has a ramp festival, a ramp supper, Saturday before that. So that's usually pretty well attended. I know there's one over in Hacker Valley. And, you know, all over the state, because that's...
Do you all have a website that people could go on to see what activities are happening around Helvetia?
Yes, and I'll have to get that for you.
We'll put it on our webpage for this.
I know there's... there's a website and there's Facebook pages.
Okay.
There's multiple Facebook pages. I grew up in Pickens, Helvetia's is a Facebook page. It is not public, but you can ask to be part of it. The Helvetia Restoration and Development is where a lot of the here's what's happening and when and who and whatever, that's where you're going to find a lot of that. But Helvetia does have a website. And
we'll post that. If people are listening, they can click on, get a direct link to that. Also, what I loved about, West Virginia Archives has so many of the photographs, the old photographs of Helvetia, which is something to check out, I think.
Yes, there were three or four reasonably accomplished photographers in the area. Uriah Schock was a professional photographer. He had offices in Webster Springs, Weston, and Buchanan, and he would make the circuit and take photographs of people and communities and stuff. And you can usually tell his because there's usually some kind of a woven coverlet or something hung behind, or he's cut greenery and put in behind the people, and his are kind of distinctive because of that. We also had Walter Agater, who was a local photographer. I forget his first name. Mr. Hofer was one of the photographers in the area, and we've had just wonderful success with people sharing those. The Shock collection went to WVU's archive, and then the State Archives in Charleston also has a nice collection of those old photographs.
They're beautiful photographs.
Just, I mean, even if we don't know who they are just stunning to look at, you know, the background, what was around the people, what they had on, you know, just everything. One of my favorite groups of photographs are the little kids, those babies that are in their beautiful white, lack of a better word, christening gowns and things like that. Just gorgeous kids.
I love, too, the pictures of the loggers, the men with the big trees and everything.
Oh, heavens. The work that they did, see them with their cork shoes, which are the big, tall, knee-high boots that had the nails in the bottom so they could walk across the logs and not slide off of them. I learned about those down at Cass.
There's just a lot of history in that area.
I'm trying to think what else we've done. On one of our Helvetia Day celebrations, this was at the very end of the COVID shutdown. Everything everywhere stopped at COVID. But we decided we wanted to do something to celebrate Helvetia Day. And what we did is we set up an outside theater of sorts. Somebody brought in a big screen and we had a portable projector and we did Heidi, the movie Heidi.
Oh, that's perfect for that.
And one of the couple of the local guys came in and did flag swinging, which that's an art in Switzerland. They throw and swing their flags to their Swiss national flag, like our Stars and Stripes, to music.
Oh.
And he gave us a little lesson on that. So that was something a little different and really well received. So we all brought our chair and kept our distance, but we still got to watch Heidi sitting out in the meadow in front of the church, which was just beautiful.
Oh, that would be memorable.
For the fair, we also have a parade, and the fair is the second full weekend in September. And that means full weekend means you have to have a Saturday and a Sunday for it to count. So if you have just a Sunday, that doesn't count. You have to start counting with the next one. But we have, all the buildings are open. There's folks there. You can take tours. You can definitely eat at the restaurant. We have a little parade that we're all dressed up in our outfits. We sing, we dance, we have program in the meadow, and it's just a lovely day. Just if the weather's good, you just can't beat it, because it's one of the oldest agricultural fairs in the state. So that's
interesting.
At one point in time, the farmers would even bring their livestock down to be judged. So there's up at the big hall downstairs, there's 4-H exhibits, there's, you know, people bring their produce and their flowers and handmade goods for judging by the
Have a big 4-H group there too, don't you?
The Sunshine 4-H group is very active. They do, I think they're under the Upshur County umbrella, because we're so close to Upshur County, and for the kids to go to camp, it's just like 5 miles away if they go to the Upshur County camp instead of over the mountains over into Beverly for the Randolph County camp.
So you're still keeping that farming life going up in Helvetia.
It's hard. I know the Pickens School just had, this last year, had something called a high tunnel, which is a greenhouse kind of thing. And the kids are learning about farming and how to take care of vegetables, and they're actually, everything they grow is being incorporated into the luncheons that they do. And the kids, some of the kids had never tasted a cherry tomato before. The fact that they are eating what they're growing, the children are learning, which I think is huge.
And you appreciate your food a lot.
Oh, how much work went into it. And that, you know, no chemicals or anything like that. So it's very organic.
That's a great program.
Yeah, it really is.
Is there anything else we haven't went over, Anna, that you'd like to include?
Something I will share about some of the early settlers and even the current day settlers that I think is really neat. When we're looking at old photographs, we don't necessarily know who's in the picture, but if they're in front of a house that has a porch railing on it, the early families had unique porch railings to their families. And I'm going to show you this.
Oh, I've seen these carved out.
That one is from the Berkey family. And the one above it, if you turn it around, is one of our newer families in the community. They elected to do ramps
in
their porch railing.
Yes. And so it's kind of like a coat of arms sort of thing.
Yes, very much, because Swiss families didn't have coats of arms. So this was, but it's really, you look at these old pictures, you might not know who's in it, but you know where they were. So they're probably connected somehow to that family.
I have never heard that.
And it's
That's
a neat tradition.
Especially if you're doing family history or something, that would be interesting.
Indeed.
Well, gosh, thank you for coming today. I hate to wrap this up,
but
I could talk all day about Helvetia. But I hope that you come back to our museum. And I encourage everyone to go to Helvetia and visit. And if you're listening, you know, please stop by our museum here on Clarksburg on Main Street.
It's a beautiful wonderful museum. Please do stop and visit.
Thank you. It's a little hidden gem here in Clarksburg. A lot of people don't know us, and we're hoping by the podcast we get the word out a little bit more. And the same with this. I hope people come to your museum and visit Helvetia. And I've had a lovely time visiting with you all.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I'm going to wrap it up by saying, I always close my podcast by saying, make each day count because you are making history today. And thank you.
There's sweet music in the silence of your wild woods, to the rhythm played by every mountain stream. It becomes a lullaby every time that I come home to West Virginia in my dreams. West Virginia mountain melodies, there's a new river singing to me. Oh, this time it's wild and free, your West Virginia mountain melodies. I feel secure in the arms of your green valley. There's a peace you've given me that yours alone. Take me in like a child to the gentle of your wild West Virginia. I'm coming home. Your West Virginia mountain melodies, there's a new river singing to me. Oh, this time it's wild and free, your West Virginia mountain melodies. West Virginia mountain melody, there's a new river singing to me. All this time it's wild and free, your West Virginia mountain melody.